G'day sports fans, welcome back to another episode of the Sports by Fry podcast. Gatherings in the books now. There's 4 weeks of the fantasy season officially done, and there's only about 3 to 4 games left for each NBA team in the regular season as well. So today's episode, I'm going to run through plenty of fantasy headlines, talk about the useless Sports by Fry stats from round 4. Large fries and Coke went okay. I'm actually not too disheartened with where my team's sitting, despite a rank of 22,000, which still sounds shit to say out loud. But plenty of fantasy bits and pieces. I want to talk a bit about Gather Round. I don't want to spend hours talking about Fremantle and Carlton, but there is a little bit that I need to say to get off my chest as a Dockers fan. And I want to unpack a bit of the NBA MVP race. I'm going to go through a couple of the numbers of the leading contenders for the award. I think on Wednesday, I'll do a big sit down and talk about all the major awards, make my all NBA picks, those bits and pieces. But I want to specifically focus a bit on the MVP race now that we're approaching, call it the last week of the regular season. So let's dive into another bumper episode. From a fantasy standpoint, as I said, 21-61 is what the large fries and Coke churned out, which was fine. Felt about par for most coaches. 7,000th for the week, that got me, and my team moved up from 32,000 to 22,000. So still shit, but I am climbing. Quick Supercoach shout out. I haven't mentioned Supercoach much on this pod because A, this is the first year I'm doing it, and B, I'm still understanding the intricacies around the scoring, but going all right so far. I scored 2,403 in the top 1% for the round, which is very juicy, up to a rank of 8,800 as well. So a couple of Supercoach check-ins will occur, I'm sure, throughout the season, but I want to focus on AFL Fantasy, the main platform that I talk about and most of the listeners of the pod play as well. So my moves rolling into this week, we're always up in the fucking air. I talked on Friday's pod about how I was going to trade for D'Ambrosio, and there was a bit of safety in numbers. Josh Weddle's someone that maybe I was going to pull the trigger on getting rid of Harley Reid for, but instead what I ended up doing was trading Sexton to Dempsey, made me a little bit of extra cash, and then I had the Nick Caulfield red dot situation to address. So Blake Howes was sitting on my bench as my emergency, only scored 30 on Thursday night, so that was not enough, and I needed to make a move elsewhere. So as the rookie bloke, I'm kicking myself a bit for picking Will Graham over Sam Cloese. I thought it was Cloese, but all I'm hearing is Closey. So Sam Closey, he was the star of round 4 from a fantasy perspective when I'm talking about all the rookies. I won't unpack too much of his bits and pieces. I'll talk about that on the rookie pod on Patreon tomorrow, but there are a couple of other things that I think could have gone a bit better for me. Obviously, trusting James Jordan for another week didn't work. There were a lot of coaches out there, myself included, that thought he would get the West Coast bump. And I was even thinking, to be honest, that he might be a safer access to 70 over some of these forward rooks, and I could try and hold him through his bye. But another 60 is shit. He's got to go now. So luckily, I've got the cash in hand to turn him into Flanders, which I think will be the most popular move of the week. The second most popular move will probably be trading Blake Howes to Closey. I did like what I saw from Will Graham as well, though. Nice role, playing a lot of midfield clock, kind of ate directly into Sam Flanders' numbers. And I ended up taking Max Gawn as my VC. Now, he only had 109, and my general rule of thumb, and I don't know why this is, but if it's a score of 111, if it's 111, aka over 110 points, I have to take it regardless. If it's 110, then it doesn't feel right. And Gawn's 109, obviously, there are a lot of coaches that took it on, and there are a lot of coaches that just banked those extra 109 points. And as I mentioned on Friday, you're going to approach different tactics depending on how your team's structured, right? Part of the reason why I cashed in Gawn's score is because I didn't really have a huge name that I trusted to come. And in the end, Jack Steele was my potential captain. So I lost about 22 points, quick math there, but that's not really going to make me sink or swim for the entire season. So I think as we approach these bye rounds and a couple of the other big names in the competition are resting, there'll be a lot of coaches out there who are trying to utilize all the loopholes and all the bits and pieces you can to get access to the highest score possible, especially with best 18 returning for round 5 and 6. But when it comes to your captains and your VCs, with a lot of potential ways that you can cash in a VC score, I think you can afford to wait a little bit now throughout the next couple of weeks with regards to picking a vice captain option. Usually I love to lock one in on Thursday or Friday night. Then it's kind of done, dusted out of the way, and I can structure my trades around understanding whether I'm going to have a donut on my field or not. But the advantage of the rolling lockout is that, you know, you can always pivot and make moves and decisions, providing players haven't played yet. So There's a couple of tidbits talking through my team and bits and pieces. On Wednesday's pod, I'll talk probably some of the main trade targets, etc., unpack some more rookie info. But let's get into the useless Sports by Fry stats. 2,900 or 2,900 for the old school coaches out there. That is the number of coaches who traded out Marcus Bontempelli, which is a bitter pill to swallow because Bont had done very little to instill his owners with confidence so far this season. He had a 90, a 104, and then 103 against West Coast. And the most alarming thing against the Eagles was he was playing a lot more forward, kicked three goals as a result, but that's not why the coaches would have picked Bont. Why you picked him is because he's capable of dropping 35 disposals, laying 10 tackles against the Cats and scoring 149, which just harbors back to the good old mantra of holding your premiums. Bont's now back to 111 average and has righted his wrongs, and his owners will be very happy if they held him to him, that is. 598 is the second useless Sports by Fry stat. That's how many points Isaac Heaney has scored through five rounds of the season. Now, we know obviously he had round zero as well, so those numbers are slightly taken out of context, but he has more points than anyone in the game right now. And after his buy in round six, I'll be interested to see where he sits. But honestly, there's no reason why Heendog won't be sitting as the highest scoring player following these early buy rounds. He's actually shot up to Brownlow favoritism. I thought he might have still been a bit of a smoky third or fourth in line, but he's actually the favorite at $6 on Sportsbet, which surprised me. He hasn't put a foot wrong, and there's some that'll be quick to point out. Taylor Adams is back and Luke Parker will eat into his midfield minutes, etc. But I think Heaney's just reached another level this year and he should be good for 110 for the rest of the season, which hurts to watch as a non-owner. I actually got on Rosie and Bont for the Brownlow in the preseason, but for those who pounced on Heaney earlier, that would have been a masterstroke. 98 is the next useless Sports by Fry stat. And that was the fantasy score from Mark Keane. Now, you could be forgiven for not understanding the fantasy chops of Mark Keane, key defender out of Adelaide, who obviously a lot of coaches would never have even put anywhere near their radar. But he missed round one against Gold Coast and then came into the side against Geelong, scored a 50, whatever. You expect that from key backs. But the next game against the Dockers, he actually stood out a little bit for me. And there were a few of the Adelaide defenders that I thought stood up well. Part of the reason was probably because Freo couldn't fucking use the ball inside 50 and they were able to take easy intercepts. But in that game against Freo, Keeney helped himself to 26 touches and 11 marks for a score of 99. I thought it was a bit of a flash in the pan. I'm like, he's not going to just have blokes kicking the ball down his throat and dominating each week. Well, he proved me wrong with 98 points against the D's. And in a position in defense where there's not a lot of reliable blokes under the 700k mark that we really like, call it even under the 600k mark. There's probably three or four that I've talked about ad nauseum, but Keane definitely is standing up as someone that you could consider. It still feels gross and I can't justify people picking him as well, but he's in over 30,000 teams now. Coaches won't be unhappy with a break even of six. I honestly don't hate the pivot if you need to generate a couple of dollars somewhere. 92 is the next useless number on my stat sheet, and that is the time on ground percentage we saw from Sam Closey. Bit stiff not to get the Rising Star nom. That went to Sam Darcy out of the Doggies, but none of us saw 92% of the game coming, and he's the most popular trade target this week for good reason. He was excelling on that wing, kind of playing like a Brandon Ellis role, going up and down on the left attacking wing for the Gold Coast Suns, and I think, what's his break even now? Negative 22. That'll make him a very convenient cash cow for coaches down back in an area that we've been desperately crying out for some assistance. Helped himself to eight marks, 22 touches, kicked a snag. I don't know if he'll be around the 90 mark every week, but he can definitely hit 70s with pretty easy consistency, I think. Anyway, number 14, that's how many players are averaging 110 at the moment. And you'd think that all of them are midfielders, right? But we're actually got a pretty decent mix this season. We've got Heaney as the forward, obviously, two ruckmen in Max Gawn and Rowan Marshall, and then two defenders in Harry Sheezel and Lockie Whitfield. But as we know, the midfield is where we get the majority of our points. So of the 14 players averaging 110, over two-thirds of them are midfielders. And I think it's important to remember that with the DPPs coming and coaches starting to look a couple of weeks ahead with their trade plans this week and next week, we've got two best of 18 rounds, and then obviously we roll back to 22 players on field, and you want to be accessing as many points as you can in that midfield area. Five is the next number. That's how many players are in at least a third of all fantasy teams on the bye round this week. And a lot of those players will be starting premiums call them top line premiums as well, to be honest. Obviously, the big one is Nick Daicos, who has seen his ownership fluctuate in the last few weeks, but he's still about 50% owned. I'll unpack him in a minute, but behind him, we've got the reliable rook in Matty Roberts. Still got a break even at 34, so I think you want to hold on to him. He did save his score late last week against West Coast. I thought he would have been capable of a few more points earlier on, but wasn't meant to be. Brodie Grundy, as an owner, I'm actually pretty fine with Grundy. He's had 150, but all of his other scores are over 90. He's got a couple of tons in there. I think that I'm just going to roll with Grundy for at least the next month or so. He's got around 12 by one of the other earlier ones on the cards coming up. So maybe around that point is when I look to pull the trigger on an upgrade there. The next one up, obviously, Isaac Heaney. I've talked in circles about him. You wouldn't be trading him out. But James Jordan is the next most popular owned buy player. Now, he's currently been traded out by, let me fact check this and see if it's updated, over 17,000 coaches have pulled the trigger on trading out JJ. And I think now is the right time to move on him. He's got a break even of 66, which isn't exactly a doom, spelling doom, but he scored back-to-back 60s. He's only had a couple of 70s before that. It's not like he's come out and scored an 85 or a 90 or a 100. So Jimmy Jordan can go, and there's a lot of options you can pivot to. Maybe if you miss the boat on Dempsey, I don't love the move, but you could do that to generate some cash. The easy move is to go up to a forward upgrade like someone like Flanders. If you don't own Dane Zorko, there's a lot of coaches who are keen on him as well. Tom Powell as well won't cost you a lot if you want to go Jordan up to Tommy Powell. So there's options out there for the coaches when it comes to these buy players. And it's interesting because I noted that when I the round three buy came and there was a lot of popular players like Tom Green, Lockie Whitfield, Sammy Flanders, even Took for that matter. A lot of non-owners would have seen the boost in their rankings while these stars rested. So if you're not a Heaney owner or you don't have Grundy out there and you're a good coach, unlike myself, then there is a way to kind of get a bit of a leg up on the coaches that are going to stick fat with their premiums. Because a lot of those guys I just reeled off, they probably won't be given the flick just yet. The last useless sports by Fry stat from round four is 2.97. And you're not going to be able to pick this one off the dome, but that is the number of coach or the ownership percentage of Josh Dunkley at the moment. We know he's a fantasy star and he's back averaging 111 points. There was a point last year where Dunkley was one of, if not the most coveted fantasy player in the game. Late last year after he returned from, was it groin injury? Something. He missed a couple of weeks and then came back over the last month of the fantasy finals and sputtered it up. 72 off the dome in the last round wasn't great, but he looks like he's back to the peak of his powers. And I did wonder if he and Lockie Neal would just eat into each other's production again this year and if Dunkley would just be back averaging 103 or something like that. But I'm expecting a big game from him soon. Now, he had 126 on Freo in round one. He's obviously had an early buy, but he hasn't dipped under 100 yet this season. He's got Melbourne, Geelong and GWS in his next three, which are on paper pretty tough matchups. But as I talked about, with dual positionings on the way, I have half an eye on Josh Dunkley as a midfield upgrade target. He's priced right in the juicy mid 900K range, 27-year-old, break even of 112. I reckon he's going to hover around this 111 mark for the majority of the season and could be a nice midfield pod for coaches out there chasing a point of difference. Together round we go. Obviously, raging success out of South Australia. Looking forward to going to one of these in the next couple of years, to be honest. I mentioned on Friday's pod about how West Australia is probably not poised to host a gather round compared to South Australia. And it seems like, to be honest, I got no dramas with keeping gather round in South Australia. I do also love the idea of having multiple gather rounds and, you know, disadvantaging the Melbourne squads somewhat. Everyone goes to Adelaide for a week. You go to WA for a week. You go to Brisbane. Then the next year, maybe one of those spots rotates to New South Wales. We even give Tassie a shout 1 year. I think it's a solid concept that the AFL's got at their hands. And a couple of the games were duds, to be honest. I mean, there was a few blowouts that some of us expected. We saw Port Adelaide smoke Essendon. A couple of close games as well, though. St Kilda and Richmond were tight. Collingwood nearly fumbled the bag against Hawthorn. But the talking point out of Gather Round comes from the Fremantle-Carlton match. And as a Dockers man, I kind of knew it was coming. I could feel it. Maybe it's the pessimist in me, but when we were holding on to a slim margin with about 5 minutes to go, there were a few moments that I saw a Freo player fumble a chest mark. I'm looking at you, Josh Tracy, or something just didn't exactly roll right for the Dockers. But at the end of the day, it's only 4 points, and I personally don't really give a shit. But it's interesting to see ruckus that has been caused from the late game. And I actually went back and made myself watch the last, call it 3 minutes today. It was a grueling exercise. But when you see the talked about moment, right, the touched kick from Hewitt's boot, Luke Jackson hits the ball to a spot that in the presser after the match, Justin Longmuir says he doesn't want it there. And when Hewitt throws it on his boot, you can maybe faintly hear one of the other umpires say touched, but you know, it then comes down to the umpires doing their job, right? Like you can't claim that audio as quite compelling and put a stake in the sand and say that that was a definitive, undeniable thing. I was looking for it and listening and I could barely hear it. But all the Freo blokes reckon they heard it. Andy Brayshaw runs up and tackles Matty Cottrell right after he takes that mark and reckons that he heard the touch. James Aish has pointed at the umpire the whole time that Cottrell's taken his kick. So I think that what we can learn from this, it was a bit of a fumbling of the bag by the umpires, but regardless of what Jordan Clark said or if he directed an F-bomb towards the umpire or if dissent should have been paid or whatever, giving up a goal right after another goal is a huge penalty in today's game. And I'm proud of Freo for holding a juggernaut offensively in Carlton to just 73 points in that game. I think they're back to staking their reputation as one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams in the game. But in a game where, you know, there's only 19 combined goals kicked and two of them come in the last 40 seconds of a match, one of them by an iffy dissent call or whatever, give them a free kick in the middle. That's fine, because we were robbed of the opportunity of Carlton go back up. What can Freo do? And that's no one's fault other than Jordan Clark's, apparently. But regardless of all the scuttlebutt out there debating whether they did the right thing or not, Longmuir pointed out a couple of the other mistakes they made, and Freo, they're only going to be better from this. Apparently, today they sat down and reviewed their mistakes and rewatched the last portion of the game. But there's 1,001 little things that happen every game. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't think it's going to define Fremantle's season. I thought that they definitely took it up to a team in Carlton who, I don't know if they are premiership favourites in my eyes, but a lot of people have them as one of the teams to watch towards the pointy end of the competition. So I think the Dockers can hold their heads high and rolling into a very interesting matchup this weekend with Port Adelaide. Quick tangent, speaking of Port Adelaide, the Sports by Fry bets did not come through last week. There was a point with about 9 minutes to go in the Port Essendon game last Friday. I had Zach Butters for a goal. Rose East stole the goals from Port Adelaide's midfielders, but Butters crumbed it kind of 12 metres out in the point of the square, and I thought, this is it. Snap over his head. The multi's alive. And he handballed it straight to Darcy Byrne-Jones, and I knew at that point the multi was cooked. Technically, I did place individual financial ventures on the three legs of the multi that I pointed out. So Carlton actually covered the 9.5 point line, and Tuke Miller only gathered 23 touches. So back to the drawing board this week. I don't want to become Nathan Brown and start costing the Sportsby fans out there valuable, valuable dosh. All right, MVP check-in time. I think it's Jokic, and I don't think that there's a debate any of the other contenders can make to supersede Jokic. Let's look at some of these numbers, right? So since the All-Star break, the Denver Nuggets are 18-5. In those games, Nikola Jokic has put up about 27 points, 13.5 rebounds, 9 assists. Great. Third best offense, fourth best defense. The Mavs since then, and Luka Doncic is building a bit of steam towards winning this award. They're 16-7, fourth best offense. Luka, since the break, is scoring the most points. He's averaging a 33-10-10 line. And then you look at SGA. The Thunder have slipped slightly, I think, it's fair to say, but they're starting to wise up in the fact that they have their eyes on the bigger picture, and their record over the last fortnight of the regular season isn't going to define them, whether they're the three or the one. Wherever they finish seeding-wise, they're gearing up to take on whoever comes their way. And Giannis is the other one. The Bucks are 12 and 10 since the All-Star break, 8th offensively, 16th defensively, but Giannis is putting up ridiculous numbers at 30, 12.5, and nearly 6 assists while nearly shooting 60%. So I think those four are going to be our clear top four finishers in the MVP race. And you can toggle a couple of people around, and when you encapsulate their successes over the entire season, I think that it's either SGA or Nikola Jokic that you should pick for the MVP. And you can get behind the Thunder. Maybe they'll finish off with the one seed, and that might see SGA poll a little bit more. But Luka and the Mavs are starting to get the notice of NBA fans, right? They're on a 9-1 streak in their last 10. They're up to the fifth seed now. There's still a couple of games behind the Clippers, so I don't think I'll see them jump into four, but These are the types of campaigns and the successes that we want to see from someone like Luka Doncic. When the trade deadline occurred and they were able to get PJ Washington in and Daniel Gafford, actually really liked those upgrades and thought that, you know, this is the team they're rolling with now for the next portion of Luka Doncic's career, call it a 2 to 3 year window. And I kind of like the team. So I still don't know if I have them as a tier one contender out West. It's a conversation for another day. But when you're unpacking the MVP award, you could make the case that Luka Doncic is the most valuable player in the league. I personally think that the most valuable player in the league is also the best player on the planet in Nikola Jokic. But it comes down to a bit of this personal preference, right? Like, do you rate a team's win-loss record a bit more? Are there individual statistics swaying you a little bit? Let's look at win percentage for each of these players this year, okay? So at the bottom at the moment is Giannis, who wins 61% of the games that he plays with the Bucks. In third place, or depending on which way you order it, next we have Luka Doncic. He wins 64.7% of the games that he's played with the Mavs this year. Jokic finishes second out of the contenders that I've mentioned at 69%. Nice. And SGA with the Thunder wins 71.8% of his games. So if you go off that metric alone, you should probably give the award to SGA, right? The more times he plays, the more times the Thunder win. But the MVP award is so much more complicated than that. There's storylines that take place. There's injury lulls that happen. There's teams that go up and down. It's an 82-game, 5-month journey that we go on when picking an MVP for the season. And I think it's fair to say that Jokic deserves and will win his third MVP. But I tell you what, the battle for second place is going to be fucking fascinating. Last thing I want to touch on, quick shout out to John at Calipari, the Kentucky men's basketball head coach, or now former Kentucky head basketball coach. He's moving to Arkansas on a 5-year deal. I'm not a massive college basketball fan, but if you know a little bit about college basketball, you'll understand John Calipari's success when it comes to churning guys out of Kentucky, right? Like Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, Tyrese Maxey. A lot of these big names have been through Calipari's basketballing factory. So I want to give him a quick shout out. 15 seasons he spent with the Wildcats, winning 77% of his games, 4 times made the Final Four, won the Natty, obviously, in 2012. But he's had 35 players that have turned into first rounders in the NBA, the second most ever by head coach at one school. So interested to see how he unfolds at Arkansas, not exactly a known basketballing school. No NBA games on tomorrow as well, obviously, because we have the national championship game, Purdue versus UConn. UConn heavy favorites. Go Huskies. Shout out to Ray Allen, Rip Hamilton, and the likes of Kemba Cardiac Walker. That's it. Done and dusted. Quick Monday Arvo evening episode for you. I'll be back on Wednesday talking through, like I said, probably some All-NBA bits and pieces. There'll be fantasy news to unpack as well. By then, all my rookie bits and pieces will probably be live on Patreon, the Dream Team Talk site, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll do a couple of other bits and pieces for social. So make sure you check them out. As always, though, I appreciate you listening to this episode. I'll catch you next time.